45 minutes before the top of the hour. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Online at tsn1290.ca. Still to come on the show, Saturday Spotlight. Coming up at the top of the next hour, Doug Cifu. Is that right now? Did you get that?
You got that right, Drew.
Okay, Doug Cifu, one of the owners of the Florida Panthers, along with Vinny Viola, sat down with Richard yesterday. We're going to be bringing that to you in its entirety coming up at the top of the next hour.
It was a great pitcher, Frank Viola. Remember him?
Yeah, Minnesota Twins.
I believe it's the first owner we've interviewed on the show before.
If I recall correctly, I think that going back in my recesses of my memory.
And, you know, generally don't have access to owners. So I thought it was certainly it was interesting to speak to Doug Cifu about the process of purchasing the team. Obviously, you'll hear it at the top of the hour here, purchasing the team and some of the struggles financially and some of the, the stability that they've tried to implement with the Panthers. So, yeah. I enjoyed speaking to him, so hopefully people enjoy the interview.
You know, they're getting a lot of flack, the Florida Panthers, or they were at least, over some of their poor crowds. Mm-hmm. But I think that they are correct. You know, the previous ownership group was giving away tickets in Florida left, right, and center.
I asked them about that, yeah.
And so you asked them about that. But from my perspective, giving away tickets left, right, and center, everybody that, if you're a walking human being, you could get a free ticket to go to a Florida Panthers game. Under the new ownership group, they've put an end to that practice. And I do think that that makes sense, because if you're, they're obviously putting a value on attending their games. Mm-hmm. If you want to attend this game, I mean, it's not prohibitively expensive by any stretch, but if you want to attend, you're going to have to pay. The previous ownership group just gives it away. Really tells you, why should the fans really be invested? Why should the fans put a high value on attending these games if the tickets are always free? So I do think that this does make a little more sense as a, they'll get flack for it and the crowds will look thin on certain nights, a Monday in October against the Ottawa Senators. The crowd is going to look poor. But it does make sense to me, I think, in the long-term building up of that franchise.
I think, and I agree with you, Drew, and again, this is,
By the way, you got to stop doing that. It's really freaking me out.
What?
Agreeing with me so much today. It's really been a problem.
You know what was freaking me out? You wearing that crab hat yesterday and then Instagramming it.
That was freaky. But, when you talk about, and that's kind of termed price integrity, and asking about Doug about that, it's the problems that the Panthers even had, Drew, is they were giving away tickets, And the tickets were papered as attendees to the game, tickets sold to the game. But you give away tickets and people weren't even showing up to those games.
Sure.
Which is another issue. You could go on and on, but it is a challenge there. He certainly discusses the fact that it is a challenge, and it's not just something that's in the past. It's an ongoing challenge. It's a business challenge. And luckily, I guess, for that organization, the people who bought the team are business savvy, and most often that is the case. The people who bought, purchased the team have been successful businessmen, and while it's somewhat a purchase based upon love of sports, maybe more than rationality at times, it'll be helpful for the league to have somebody in place who's run a successful business in the past. That doesn't mean that they haven't had people in place who've done that before, because they have, Wayne Huizenga with Blockbuster, different things, but... we'll see how they fare in this challenge.
Just realized I think I have some videos still that I have to return to Blockbuster. Are they? They're not open anymore, are they?
No.
Okay. Jokes on them. But anyways, back to a sane thought. Richie's talking here about the ownership, and I think really Richie, the most important thing to take from what's going on in Florida, and I know at the beginning of the season, the game against Ottawa, everyone was tweeting out the bad crowd and all that, but they have the ship going in the right direction. You have stable ownership, and really now in the NHL you have stable ownership across the board.
You do.
And you got to give Gary Bettman credit for that, because mm-hmm. 5 years ago, six teams that had issues, right? And even throw in the New Jersey Devils, for example, they were having issues, but Vinny Viola and Doug Cifu, they're doing a good job here, and what they're trying to do is build a winning culture and a fan base. And let's be honest, they've made the playoffs once in 10 years. I mean, it's been almost 20 years since rats were being thrown on the ice in Florida, and with the days of Scott Mellenby and all that, and this team has struggled to get people in the seats because the team hasn't been winning. And they've drafted well. And you look at some of the guys they have in the system with Alexander Barkov and obviously Aaron Ekblad, who was just drafted about 4 months ago. And, you know, there's a lot to be excited about now. And, you know, the crowds, they'll come, and especially when they start winning. And it might take a little bit longer than they'd expect, because I don't think the Florida Panthers are a playoff team yet.
Right.
That's just my opinion. I don't think they're going to make it this year. But I think when you look at, you know, the youth they have and some of the signings they've made, Roberto Luongo has stabilized the goalie situation. Mm-hmm. There's reason for optimism for the fan base there.
Want to spend a couple minutes talking about one of the Winnipeg Jets' Central Division rivals, and that's the Dallas Stars. You know, a lot of hope for the Stars, but they're off to a bit of a slow start this season. 4-2-4 through their first 10 games, so 12 points, which isn't bad, but, you know, 4 overtime losses, which, of course, could have gone either way. More importantly to the Dallas Stars fans is they have loaded up their top line. You know, you sort of got it. You went into the season thinking, you know, Tyler Seguin is their top line center,
yep,
and then Jason Spezza is going to be their second line center.
Yep.
Hasn't worked out that way, as the Dallas Stars and Jim Neal and the coaching staff have made a decision to go with a top line of Jamie Benn, Jason Spezza, and Tyler Seguin, moving Seguin to the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously those are three of the most talented players in the NHL. You know, an absolute dominant top line. You know, do you think that's the right decision for the Dallas Stars? Or they, you know, do they become too easy to play against once you get past that first line?
It's a really good question, because there's the two parts of that question, I think, are not mutually exclusive. I think, first off, that line is 38 points.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm, it's incredible. Don't the Buffalo Sabres have like 12 goals? That line is 38 points in 10 games. It's the best line in hockey right now. If you watch the Dallas Stars, I mean, are we going to debate that at all? I mean, there's some good lines. I know Crosby, Kunitz, and Hornquist are doing pretty well, and Getzlaff and Perry is a good line. But can you argue that? I mean, look at this. This is a line. I mean, all three of these guys, you could argue, should be on the Canadian Olympic team, right? So, I mean, you look at this line, and I think, yes, Drew, it does kind of make them a little bit easier to defend, in the sense that you don't have to deal with the Spets on the second line, but you still have to deal with the first line. And I think the issue here is, Richie, Valerie Nichushkin, mm-hmm, has only played 2 games. And I believe he's now, they sent him down to the AHL for a conditioning stint. He's only played 2 games, and he was on the top line there for much of last year, and he's a great player. I know you really like him.
I do.
But I think what that's done is that's kind of limited what Lindy Ruff can do, and Alice Hemsky hasn't looked good. And, you know, you have Eakin and Garbutt, who are more third-line guys, the grinder guys, the penalty kill and all that. So I think this is a good short-term thing. I don't think, by the way, that this is going to stick. I think once Nichushkin comes back, you're going to see him on the top line, and then Spezza will go back to centering the second line.
And you move Seguin back into the middle. And Seguin's, yep, played the right wing in Boston before, and, of course, is a natural center, and played center all of last year in kind of his breakout season. Yeah, I agree with you. As the top line in hockey, because the skill level is just through the roof. I mean, you're talking about guys who can all shoot, actually. You know, I mean, Spezza may not shoot enough, and but he's got a good shot, and there's just, they see the ice so well. But I look at it more so, okay, you know, Dallas right now, you mentioned, Drew, is 4-2-4. If the playoffs started today, obviously early, we're 10 games through the season, but if the playoffs started today, they play Nashville in the first round, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you stay in the division, I'm not doing the crossover, all right, whether conceivably Calgary be a crossover, but they're going to play Nashville.
We're not talking playoff matchups,
okay?
You know.
Just an example.
Yeah.
Even any of the teams that they're, if I look at the teams ahead of them, Minnesota, Chicago, Nashville, why don't we do an example? Nashville, Weber, Yossi. Chicago, Keith, Seabrook. Minnesota, Brodin, Suter. If you're able to put that top pairing against that line for an entire series, then, as he mentions, yep, you're counting on guys like Eakin. It's got a skill level, a little bit of a tweener second, third line guy, can play second line, probably best app for third line. But you're counting on guys like that and Vern Fiddler, who's limited offensively. And, you know, and when you're looking at, and then Sean Horkoff, who's better, you know, best days are behind him, that's up the middle. You're in trouble there. So I think now it's fine. And as he mentions, you know, if Nichushkin comes back, maybe they make some moves, but they can just make some moves in their roster and still have, you know, you can throw Nichushkin on the top line and have Spezza back on the second line, and have really good top six. I just think when it comes down to a playoff matchup, if that's what you're looking at, this team would struggle, because that top line would have to be so good against some of the best like this division, Weber, Pietrangelo, Keith, Suter, and getting out of this division in the playoffs. And if you move over, you're still looking at Doughty, you know, and maybe Anaheim, and Sanz, they don't have those shutdown guys.
Vlasic.
Yeah. So, but I just think that long-term it doesn't work, short-term it's fine.
Are you surprised that, you know, Alex Hemsky and Jason Spezza, they were so good together in Ottawa last year after Hemsky came over. Are you surprised that they haven't been able to sort of recreate that magic in Dallas? Because when they traded for Spezza and then they went and signed Hemsky, everyone's like, wow, that's such a great move. You know, bring them together as a package. We've seen what they can do together in Ottawa. They should be able to recreate that in Dallas. Are you surprised it hasn't worked out for them that well?
Yeah, I am surprised, Drew. And, you know, it was, what was it, 12 games, 15 games that they played together in Ottawa last year? It was a small sample size, but, I mean, it was still impressive. You look at Alex Hemsky, and I know I've kind of said this over the years. You look at his career, and going back to Edmonton, obviously, which he played for, what was it, 8 or 9 years, he's been a very inconsistent player, and he's shown flashes of being a dominant player. You know, he's put up the 70-point seasons earlier in his career, and then he struggled. And, you know, last year with the Edmonton Oilers, I mean, he couldn't get into the top six, and that's why they ultimately moved him, Richie. They didn't want to give him the money. And, you know, he had 26 points in 55 games with the Oilers last year. He was pretty bad for Alex Hemsky. I mean, this is a guy we're talking about that was, you know, a 20-goal, 70-point guy for 3 or 4 years.
He's got 1 point in 10 games so far this year.
And he's been on the third and fourth lines.
He's lucky he's not in the press box.
He's been in Lindy Ruff's doghouse.
Well, he's playing with Patrick Ease and Vernon Fiddler right now, guys.
I know, but he started the year with, you know, Jason Spezza, and even on his own, I mean, he should be able to get you more than 1 point in 10 games.
I agree, the struggle, it is early, but he's not going to create any points. He's playing with Vernon Fiddler and Patrick Ease.
Well, which goes back to our original point in the conversation is, by loading up that top line,
right,
you have nothing left on those bottom, on those other lines.
You don't, and that's why, you know, it's early. And they're trying to get points. Something's working right now. They're going to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'll see.
Long term, it doesn't work.
Rich, you'll see Hemsky go up there. Ruff will put Hemsky up there with Spezza later on in the season. I mean, you're not going to see Alex Hemsky playing a fourth line role on this team. That's not what he was brought in for. He also wasn't brought in exclusively to play with Jason Spezza. Hey,
right. That's
what happens sometimes. Sometimes, you know, combinations don't work out. I mean, how many times have we seen flashes of a forward combo? You know, in parts of seasons, and then you just are never able to recreate it. But I wouldn't be surprised if when Nichushkin comes back and they start stabilizing the lines, I wouldn't be surprised if you saw Hemsky and Spezza back together.
You could even see Hemsky play on the top line, too. I mean, they Ben's a left winger, Sagan's a center. You could play him on the right side. It's early, but, I mean, that line's dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows if they make other moves. Jim Neal, very, very sharp general manager.
Yeah, so I just checked, by the way, and that line, Spezza, Ben... Mm-hmm. And Sagan, 14 goals. Buffalo as a team, 13 as a team. Yeah.
I went on that rant on Wednesday. I mean, the team has 13 goals.
Has that ever happened in NHL history where a line has had, I mean, like, has that ever happened where a line 10 games into the season has more points than a team?
I went on the rant Wednesday, so I'll save it. I'll save it. I already went on it. I'm not going to do it again. 13 goals in 11 games is embarrassing.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the first-round draft picks and how they've developed so far this year. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, a number of the first-round picks from 2014 have reached the 10-game mark, or the 9-game mark, after which a decision needs to be made on whether or not they are going to go back to their junior clubs or stay with their big clubs. Three of the top picks had that decision made for them. Aaron Ekblad staying with the Florida Panthers for the entirety of the season. He, of course, was the first overall pick.
The guy's playing 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, well, there's no reason why he wouldn't even consider it. Sam Reinhart, Buffalo Sabres draft pick, sent back to the Kootenai Ice of the WHL. I would have to think he's not going to be long for the Kootenai Ice, given how terrible they are as a team.
They've won two games this year.
Yeah, they've won two games. So you would think he would be traded to a real contender in the WHL that would then, you know, give up a boatload of you know, draft picks for the rights to have Sam Reinhart and really put their team over the top and be competitive for the Memorial Cup. And Leon Draisaitl is staying with the Edmonton Oilers for the rest of the season. There was a little bit of a question about him.
Yeah.
You know, let's start with Draisaitl. That seems like it's the most controversial decision of the three.
Well, staying with him past the 10-game mark. You never know about the 40-game mark.
Fine, but right. They're burning a year of his entry-level contract.
Right, just so people, to clarify for the listeners, if you play more than 10 games, then you burn a year of your entry-level deal. If you play more than, if you're on the roster for more than 40 games, then you're a year closer to free agent status.
Right, and so, it doesn't carry over from year to year either.
Right, so what happens is, for example, if you're on the roster for 40 games and you're a UFA at 26, if you're on the roster for less than 40 games, you're still a free agent at 27, but you're 1 year closer to arbitration, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and Richie, I think, getting back to the big ones and the top draft picks of this most recent draft, the top four of the 2014 draft, you can't put Sam Bennett in there because he's out for the season.
Mm-hmm.
He's injured, and unfortunately, he's not going to play for the Calgary Flames. That would have been an interesting one as well.
Who needs him? They're on fire.
Exactly. And, hey, Flames, fire.
I knew you were going to say that.
Like it? But, you look at Sam Bennett, and I would have expected him to probably stay up there. But you never know because, you look at Sam Reinhart and the Buffalo Sabres, they can't score goals. He wasn't scoring for them, but they decided it's kind of like one of those arguments that you have and there's no right answer. I mean, you're not going to be good this year, so where does he develop best, right? I look at Leon Draisaitl, and to me, he's got a goal, and they really like him in Edmonton. And I think I didn't have an issue with any of these moves because I think he can go either way. I don't think anybody expected Aaron Ekblad to be available for Team Canada at the World Juniors and go back to junior. I mean, Richie, you look at Aaron Ekblad.
Yeah,
he's a man. He plays like a 25-year-old.
He's a man. He's totally no question about it. But Reinhardt, I need to see more of. But of course, that's a terrible losing culture. Get him out of there.
Well, is that not why, Richie, they make that decision? They say, okay, we're going to be we're going to be bad here. Yeah, and exactly. Why burn a year of his contract?
Absolutely.
Because they made that mistake with Mikhail Grigorenko a number of years back before the new regime came into Buffalo.
That's true.
Is that they kept Grigorenko up for, I think, it was 40 games.
It was 40 or 50 games.
Yeah.
Pretty much
the majority of the season. Then, randomly, they sent him back down to his junior team. It was just a mishandled situation with Grigorenko in Buffalo. Not yet sure about the long-term damage that's going to do to his career, but that was poorly handled by the Buffalo Sabres and by the old regime there.
Now, I believe it's Anthony DeClaire and the Rangers that has already burned a year of his entry level because he was signed at age 20. So if they sent him back to his junior team, which is another guy that people have talked about, it wouldn't matter because he's already burned a year of his entry level.
During the lockout year, Drew, Grigorenko played 25 games, and he was actually up for more than that because he was a healthy scratch.
Yeah,
but it was 25 games and it burned a year on his contract.
Let's get to the Oilers, though. The Oilers, I've liked what I've seen of Draisaitl, and it's limited. I can say that. It's only really a game I've seen him play, and I've watched a video of him in junior. So, certainly limited. But you're telling me that the Oilers would keep up Draisaitl if they had any depth at center whatsoever?
No.
So, I think that's a poor decision. I think it's based on need more than it is on development and performance.
Well, you talk about need, though. What is he bringing to the table? I mean, he's getting some experience, sure.
He's more talented than the rest of the options they have at center, Drew.
Fine, but this year, they're not making the playoffs.
Well, they can't beat the Western Conference. I mean, they succeeded against the Eastern Conference, but they've been playing better lately, of course, and maybe they do make a bit of a run. But at the end of the day, exactly, Drew, what are they going to do? With that defense, they're not doing too much, and that defense are not doing too much.
No, it just seems like the Tampa Bay Rays. We've talked about this on the show before. In baseball, always manage their young players in such a way that yes, they probably are good enough to play with the major league team, but no, we're not going to bring them up too early because they're going to be able to be free agents sooner if we bring them up too soon.
Well, also, it's another perspective.
That was terrible English.
That's okay, but you're talking about value, really, at the end of the day, Drew. I read an article this week. I forget who wrote it, and it was quoting Jim Neal. And Jim Neal talked about the development process he had. He had opportunities to leave Detroit, but he ended up staying longer. And he says, better to experience those, over-experience something than jump into something too early, right?
Sure.
Maybe a couple extra years of seasoning before jumping in too early. And he said, you know, even for his own career, a couple extra years in Detroit, maybe he could have got a job, but he was even more prepared when he took the Dallas job. And he had a quote in there saying, it's not whether the player, like the Detroit mantra, is not whether the player can make the team, is good enough to make the team. It's whether the player is prepared enough to help you win. And I think there's a distinction there. And I think that applies here. Is he good enough to make the team? Yeah, probably, especially based on the fact you have a center need. Is he good enough to help you win? In this case, maybe, but I don't know if I'm completely convinced. And then when you talk that, I think that's just talking about skill, physical preparation, mental preparation. That's why I'm talking about the contract and the value that you're speaking about, Drew, which I agree with you. And again, scary enough, that the value factor here. And you talked about Regier rushing and Grigorenko. And there's been a regime change. Well, there hasn't been a regime change in Edmonton.
No.
You know, McTavish is essentially, you know, with Lowe and all the guys there, Tambellini, it's an old boys club. And I know they brought in some new people in there, sure. But they've rushed how many of their young players now?
No, every one of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them, and they're surprised when they don't get the results. I mean, how many 18-year-olds really step in and make a huge impact? Well, there's not that many.
I know we got to go to break here, Drew. One thing to consider here. Corey Clouston was recently fired by the Prince Albert Raiders.
Yeah, yesterday.
Dreisaitl would have gone back to the Prince Albert Raiders. Dave Manson is actually taking over on an interim basis as the head coach. We've had him on the show before, former Jet. There's a rumor that Josh Morrissey is going to be traded from the Prince Albert Raiders. Don't have a very good team. They're 6-9 to start the season. There's a rumor that Morrissey might be traded either before or after the World Juniors, and maybe the Edmonton Oilers thought that they didn't want Dreisaitl going back to a junior team that has coaching issues. I'm just saying.
I'm not saying it's not a good point, but they'll trade him. They'll deal with it
in the summer.
Maybe they didn't want him to not know if he was going to play for them.
If I recall correctly, in the summer there was even the report that Dreisaitl, if he was sent back, it wouldn't necessarily be to the junior. It might be sent back to Europe to play with men in one of the elite leagues.
I heard a rumor that the Oilers' defense is so bad, Dave Manson might suit up for their defense.
Yeah. Well, he's got 100 mile per hour.
What was the trade? It was Boris Smirnov and Mats Lindgren for Dave Manson. Is that the trade?
That's correct.
Sounds right.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Saturday Spotlight with Florida Panthers co-owner Doug Cifu. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Down 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Saturday Spotlight this week is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey, conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at BernsteinsDeli.com.
The Illegal Curve, Saturday Spotlight.
For Saturday Spotlight this week, Richard Pollock sat down with the co-owner of the Florida Panthers, Doug Cifu. Here is that
the
interview.
The Illegal Curve, Saturday Spotlight.
Here is that interview in its entirety. Richard and Doug Cifu, co-owner, Florida Panthers. Looks like we're having a couple of technical difficulties in getting that interview up and running. We'll get that back to you in 2 seconds, I'm sure. But Richie, you said that he was very honest and candid about his ownership?
Whenever I asked him a question, he just didn't answer. Like that. No, I'm kidding. No, he was actually very forthright. And we're going to have an opportunity here in just a few seconds. When a owner jumps into the league, I always find it interesting in terms of, you know, what brings him there. If you're buying the Toronto Maple Leafs, you're buying a brand, you're buying a religion almost. You're making money, right? It's a different intention, I think, than if you're buying the Florida Panthers. I mean, you don't know if you'll make money. There's a risk inherent in that. If you buy the Leafs, you know you're going to make money. There's no the risk. There's really no risk. You just need the cash, which is why, you know, the two, Bell and Rogers, joined up and bought the Leafs. You know, you own the Habs, you know you're making money. So you have to have a risk tolerance before purchasing the team, and you also have, I think, you have to have a love for the game. Because if you don't have a love for the game, what draws you to purchase and take that chance? And that's what I find fascinating about ownership of the Southern squads, is that there is a risk that goes with it. And it's not like in LA where you can kind of package the Lakers and the Kings together, although the Lakers are not a great team right now. It's, you know, Miami and Miami Heat and the Florida Panthers played at different arenas. You're not packaging that together, really. So it's, you have to be really creative to make it a go.
Right, and we've seen how successful Terry Pegula has been in Buffalo, for example. And now you have the Harbor Center that's being built, and they're going to be getting the NHL Draft Combine and all that. But you're absolutely right, Richie. And this goes back to what we were talking about last hour about NHL ownership and how stable it is right now across the league. And sure, there are some issues in Florida with attendance, and there's some issues in other markets. And, you know, Arizona hasn't turned it around completely. But the fact that there's stable ownership is really important. And yeah, there absolutely has to be a passion for the game. That is something that I think that, yeah, sure, these guys are very wealthy, and they're wealthy for a reason. But I don't necessarily know that owning an NHL team is kind of a hobby.
Technical difficulties, I believe, have been solved. Here's Sarah the Spotlight, Richard Pollock with Doug Cifu, co-owner of Florida Panthers.
Fourth edition of the Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290 by Doug Cifu, co-owner of the Florida Panthers. Doug, thanks very much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Big win last night, first off. And we're going to kind of talk about, you know, how you came to become an owner and what it's like to be an owner. But I first want to say, you know, win over Phoenix, I always say, Arizona last night. And Roberto Luongo has been pretty good for you guys so far. What's been your thoughts on the season to this point?
You know, I got to tell you, I'm pretty happy with the season thus far. I mean, we just came off a four-game road trip where we got 6 out of 8 points, and frankly, we were in every game. Obviously, we could have had four wins and, you know, a couple bounces here, a call or two there, and we would have had four wins. This is a very, very different team than last year's team. You know, we made a lot of improvements in the offseason. As you said, you know, Luongo continues to stand on his head. And the one thing Dale Talon has taught me about hockey teams is being strong up the middle, and that starts with your goalie, is really paramount. So Luongo has kept us in, frankly, every game pretty much this season. We're playing great team defense. You know, Willie Mitchell, Ekblad looks like the second coming of Ray Bourque. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just, I'm really, really excited about this team.
I want to get more into the Panthers a little bit, Doug, but I first want to go back to, you know, you growing up before you become, obviously, an owner of an NHL team, and you grew up in New York. Was hockey the big sport in your household, or was this a baseball house, football? What was the big one growing up?
Yeah, no, I mean, athletically, I was never much of an athlete, so I was much more of a fan, if you will. But I did grow up on Long Island in the mid to late 70s. It's when the Islanders franchise started. Mm-hmm. You know, Clark Gillies was my neighbor. You know, Pot Van was always around, both Pot Vans. You know, Mike Bossy was like a folk hero. And as I told Mr. Torrey, I was unhappily a Ranger fan, and he pretty much ruined my childhood because I was in high school from 1979 to 1983. Which were the years that the Islanders won the Cup, and I had to watch Bobby Nystrom and other guys parade around my high school at the Stanley Cup. But definitely was a huge hockey fan growing up. In fact, the first hockey game I went to was, I think, 1974, 1975, was an old Eastern League team called the Long Island Ducks that played in the Comac Arena out on Long Island. I think they were the model for the movie Slapshot. So that's I grew up watching a lot of hockey as a kid.
So you grew up on Long Island despising the Islanders.
I did, yeah. It's an interesting way to grow up. New Yorkers, I know you guys are way out west, but New Yorkers, you're typically either an old New York sports fan, so you like the Rangers, the Knicks, the Yankees, and the Giants, or you're a like new New York sports fan, so you like the Islanders, the Jets, the Mets, and I guess the Nets on some level. And I was an old sports New York sports guy, not a new New York sports guy.
Do you have a favorite Ranger growing up?
You know, I guess it'd probably have to be J.D., John Davidson. You know, he was a fantastic goalie, maybe one of the first, you know, prototypical larger goalies. I didn't actually realize what a big man he was until one of the recent NHL owner meetings I was at, and I had the good fortune of sitting near J.D. and spending some time with him. But I loved him in 79, when the Rangers made the finals. He had a great run there, unfortunately ran into a great Canadiens team, but he was a terrific, terrific goalie and a hero of mine as a kid.
Now, Doug, you attended Columbia Law School and you worked at Paul Weiss, a law firm in New York after that. When you were going through law school and then working at the firm, did you keep an active eye on the NHL, or were you just focused on the work that you were doing at that time?
I did. No, I was a Rangers season ticket holder. I sat in Blue Heaven. It was, as we called it, it was the upper tier of the old Madison, well, the current Madison Square Garden. They've since reconfigured it. Mm-hmm. It was the upper deck, and it was, I vaguely remember, like $12 a game or something like that. I had probably the worst section, if you will, from a viewing perspective, but it was one of these great sections where everybody knew each other. And they would be like, we'd run a pool on, you know, first fight, first goal, that kind of thing, and chanting. And so I went to Columbia College and Columbia Law School, so I was a season ticket holder from the mid-'80s through the Stanley Cup year, like 94, 95.
What stands out most about that year?
The run to the Cup was just incredible. I mean, New York, I know you guys come from a rich hockey heritage. New York is a great hockey town. It really is. Great embedded love for the Rangers. The fan base here is unbelievably passionate, as I know it is out where you guys are. But it had just been so many years of, you know, those chants of, 1941 kind of thing, and so many years of frustration, and so many years of almost winning that it was really a magical season, because as well, I'm sure the Knicks were in the finals that mm-hmm. year as well. So the combination of both New York teams making a run at the championship, and then of course, the great Game Sevens, beating the Devils, which was a lot of fun, and Messier essentially guaranteeing and then delivering a cup, is something as a New Yorker you'll never forget.
Joined by Doug Cifu, co-owner of the Florida Panthers, on Saturday Spotlight on TSN 1290. Doug, how did you meet your co-owner, Vinny Viola?
Well, I was, as you said before, I was a practicing lawyer here in New York. Vinny, Mr. Viola, is a very prominent businessman, entrepreneur. And as many prominent businessmen entrepreneurs go, he needed legal representation, and I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And he called me up one day. I heard of him from some other clients. He's kind of a well-known guy around New York, and came for a visit, and we clicked personally and professionally, and represented him for a number of years. And so we developed a real close professional, working relationship, which became, a very, very close personal friendship pretty quickly.
So what prompted your interest then in the Florida Panthers?
So Vinny and I own and operate a big electronic trading firm here. We've made a number of other investments together. And, he's a great sports fan himself. Played lightweight football at Army, and he and I would go to Ranger games and Net games together. Vinny had been a minority owner of the New Jersey Nets, and we always said to each other, hey, we're going to own a sports team together, because we were just two kids growing up sports fans. We thought that'd be an unbelievable, great, fun thing to do together, mm-hmm. number one. And number two, we thought, hey, we're good operators of businesses. This is a business. It's different than some of the other businesses we run, but if we apply our operating discipline to a sports and entertainment franchise, we could do a pretty good job together. So it was a little bit of ego, maybe a little bit of stupidity, a little bit of like, this will be a lot of fun, and a little bit of we think we're good operators, and that's how we got involved.
When you were going through on your purchase of the club and dealing with Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, what was it like dealing with those two gentlemen, and did you have any experience dealing with them before, and do you have any kind of interesting stories to share?
Well, I had some prior sports experience at being a lawyer. I had represented Major League Baseball, actually, in a bunch of financings, and so I was familiar with the leagues, and my old law firm had a sports and entertainment practice, and so it was definitely something that I had encountered. I think Vinny and Gary immediately hit it off. They're both, and as did I, with those two guys, we're all kind of New Yorkers. We have the benefit of being in New York City. That's where our main business is, and so it's very easy to go back and forth to the NHL. I think, frankly, they were very happy and pleased to meet us because, Florida's been a franchise, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, mm-hmm. that's had a lot of instability, a lot of different owners, a lot of GMs, a lot of coaches, and frankly, not a lot of success on the ice. And to get, two energetic guys, with resources that were excited and maybe dumb enough to take on a big challenge. I think the league was very happy about it. I mean, Bettman and Daly and the entire staff have been unbelievably gracious with their time and extremely, really helpful in terms of us looking at ticketing and looking at how we run our marketing campaigns and what we do with sponsorship and whatnot. They've got a wealth of experience, and so really a terrific resource for us.
Doug, was there anything about the vetting process that the NHL put you through that surprised you, or is that all something you've dealt with before?
I'll be honest with you, it was pretty intrusive, and I think that's a great thing, I guess. I think they learned a lot from
maybe some of the mistakes of the mid-90s where you had, guys who came in who weren't obviously what they were. You know, the guy that owned the Islanders for a brief moment who apparently didn't have any money, the Spanos guy.
Yeah.
So, it was great in a way because I learned a lot about myself, how much money I'm worth, where all my accounts are. It was an incredibly detailed process, let's put it that way, unbelievably thorough vetting process. And so I, for the first time in my life, I had to put together a balance sheet, so now my wife is very happy I'm organized. So that was a real positive.
Joined by Doug Cifu, co-owner of the Florida Panthers, on Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Doug, last year you were quoted as saying that the Panthers were losing approximately $100,000 a day. What's been done to remedy that financial strain on the team?
Well, we're going to lose money this year. Not as much as that, but we're going to lose money this year. We've done a number of things. First and foremost, we didn't cut our investment on the hockey team. In fact, our payroll went from the high 50s to we're playing around $65 million this year, which for the Panthers is clearly a record high, and we're $4 million from the cap, as you fellows know. So that's the one thing we did not sacrifice. We did a lot of streamlining on the non-hockey side. We did simple things like previously, we operate the arena down there. It's called the BB&T Center. And previously, all the cleaning and housekeeping and security and ushers and landscaping and pest control, believe it or not, all those services had been outsourced. We brought those in-house and, literally are saving millions and millions of dollars doing that. The other thing which we've done, and it's been, reported a lot, and people have talked a lot about our attendance, and I'm happy to talk about all those things, is we've really changed the way that we market and ticket the team. We actually reduced ticket prices, but stopped a lot of comp tickets and a lot of heavy discounting then of season ticket prices and whatnot. And so our net intake, if you will, of ticketing revenue hasn't suffered. It's actually gotten better this season, although our attendance numbers are down.
You talk about that price integrity. How do you balance the public perception of that with the bottom line?
Well, to be honest with you, we looked at the brand and we looked at the franchise and said something really dramatically has to change. First and foremost, we want to have a great hockey team and win the Stanley Cup and be in the playoffs and give the fans in South Florida a team that they can be proud of. That's the first thing. The second thing is we looked at Chicago circa 2003, 2004, the Blackhawks as a model, and Dale Tallon, our GM, was there and actually was instrumental in helping us think about this. And what Chicago went through, the same things that Florida is going through right now, that the Panthers are going through right now. They had, inflated attendance numbers historically because, tickets have become complimentary or heavily discounted. And there's a lot of, if you go to the blogs, you can see some of the promotions that were previously done. Our view was, and this was echoed by Dale and other experts we spoke to, was if you're a season ticket holder and you're paying $100 for 41 games, and the guy sitting either next to you or on the row behind you got his tickets on StubHub for $5 or $10 because they were given away free or they're deeply discounted, that's not a good value proposition. Like, to me, that's basic ticketing 101. That's really what had happened. And so the loyal hockey fans had been disenfranchised, not only because of the poor performance on the ice, but also because of the lack of price integrity and transparency. And so our decision was, we're going to take the pain of smaller crowds, but we're going to know, like last night, we had a really nice crowd in the building, if you will, which was very vocal, was very loud. And you know what? Everybody that was in the building last night paid to be in the building. I'm very happy about that.
It's really interesting. You talk about Dale Tallon, his experience in Chicago, really building the Blackhawks very much to the team they are today. The core that he put together is still there. We had Jay Feaster on our show about a year ago, just before he had left Calgary, and he was a general manager there. And we asked him about being general manager in Calgary versus being general manager in Tampa Bay. And he talked about the responsibilities in Tampa being not only building the team, but also being able to kind of make the team something that people want to come to in Tampa Bay. So his job wasn't just hockey, it was also on promoting the squad. Does Dale have that same responsibility, or is that those responsibilities been compartmentalized a bit?
No, 100%. I mean, the way I look at our franchise, I mean, we have a saying in Virtuland, which is where I work, that titles are meaningless, right? So Dale's the general manager. We have Rory Babbage as our president and CEO. Those are all great titles. But at the end of the day, we're all in this together. And there's not a better sponsor person, not a better representation of the Florida Panthers than Dale Tallon. I mean, first of all, the guy is a hockey whisperer, as I call it, right? He knows everything about the game. He's been playing hockey since he was 4 or 5 years old. His dad bought him his first pair of skates, I think he told me when he was 4. He was a fantastic player. He's forgotten more today about hockey than I'll ever know. And so we view him as a resource, not only on the hockey side, but he's a terrific, articulate, engaging person that our sponsors and, frankly, our fans want to get close to and want to spend time with. So in a non-traditional hockey market, it's very important that your not only your hockey personnel, but also your players are unbelievably solicitous and accommodating to fans. The players that we have actually really enjoy it. Sean Thornton is a perfect example. Wonderful guy. I obviously got to know him. He signed as a free agent this year. Sean's come up to me and to Vinny and said, anything I can do for this franchise, I'll do. He volunteers, you know, in the community, went to, is going to one of the children's hospitals in Broward County literally today. He volunteers to come to fan forums. Those are the kind of things in a non-traditional market are really, really value-adding to our season ticket holders that are very, very important.
Joined by Doug Cifu on the Saturday Spotlight, co-owner of the Florida Panthers. Doug, you talk about Sean Thornton, one of the free agents you brought into you know, Sunrise this year. Signing free agents generally for the Panthers, you know, it's a pretty appealing place. Florida, the taxes, the weather. And some people talk about, you know, different things too, maybe the pressure or lack thereof as opposed to playing in Canada. What was the courting process like this offseason as you guys signed Boland and obviously Jokinen, and you mentioned Thornton and Willie Mitchell? How did that go, and do you see that, you know, changing at all moving forward?
First of all, you're right. You know, if anybody wants to sign me as a free agent, I'm more than happy to go down to Florida. It's a beautiful place to live, nice style of living, no state taxes, which in the U.S. is a big deal. So, you know, if you play for the Rangers and you want to play for the Panthers, you get yourself a 13% raise. Anybody mm-hmm. listening to the show that wants to come, that's a huge advantage. That's the first thing. We were very methodical about July 1st this year. You know, we started, you know, we're very involved with Dale in terms of trying to, you know, one, create a budget that makes sense, but two, pick the right people, the right character folks for our team. And so we started from a list of, frankly, every UFA. We obviously knew we had some needs. We had two great young centermen, Barkov and Bukestad. We wanted an experienced centerman. We wanted a fourth-line center that could anchor our team for a long time. We wanted a right winger with some grit. We wanted a scorer that we could pair with a Barkov. And we wanted, frankly, also a backup goalie that we could be confident on those 10 to 15 to 20 games where Luongo couldn't play. There wouldn't be a material drop-off in skill level. And then finally, we knew we had to make our blue line deeper and better. And so those were really the pressing needs. We put everybody on a piece of paper and a little bit into a computer and preference them. And frankly, we had six top picks, if you will. We got every one of them. We got everybody that we wanted in free agency. And they were targeted, one, for their skill, but also, two, for their character. I mean, Willie Mitchell, I'd never met the man, and Dale Talon said to me, he's going to be the next captain of the Florida Panthers. You're going to love this guy. I met him, Vinny and I met him in early, I guess, mid-September when right around training camp started. He spoke for about 5 minutes to Vinny and I. We looked at each other and said, this guy's the captain of the Florida Panthers. He's an unbelievable, perfect signing for our team, just as an example.
Really interesting. And, you know, I think the stability of the franchise, we mentioned off the top the performance of Roberto Luongo so far. How was acquiring Roberto Luongo stabilize the franchise?
What a gift. I mean, what an absolute gift that hopefully we'll keep giving. And people talk about his contract. I mean, you know, to me, the guy is first of all, he wanted to come back. Mm-hmm. He wanted to play in Florida. He's got family there. His wife was from around 10 minutes from the arena. He had obviously been there. He spent all summer, even when he was on Vancouver, training in our practice facility. So the guy effectively has been a Panther, mm-hmm. you know, for the last, you know, 10, 12 years. When Dale called me, I was actually in a meeting when he called me when he was making this deal with Vancouver, and he said, you know, they've offered us Luongo for X, Y, and Z, and here's how much salary they're going to retain. It literally took me under 8 seconds to say do it, because to me that was such a monumentally important move for our franchise. I mean, literally every game when the guy's in net, you know that you're in the game. You know that you're in the game. I mean, he played so well last night for us. I had no doubt we were going to win that game.
It's really interesting talking about, you know, building a team, and you talk about free agency and then acquiring a goaltender via trade, and you talked about Dale Talon. Gerard Gallant, I was reading about his hiring process and you and Vinny being convinced pretty quickly that he was the right guy. Can you tell people about that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Vinny, just by background, Vinny is a brilliant man, an unbelievable entrepreneur, one of my best friends, and a real, real gentleman. You know, he's made his living being very instinctive. He grew up, if you will, in a trading pit of 200 guys, mostly guys in the New York Mercantile Exchange downtown, and you had to be instinctive and read people and have a gut reaction to a market and to people, okay? And so when, you know, we obviously Dale does all the screening, and we said, Dale, talk to anybody you want. Give us the five or six names of the finalists. We'll have them come to New York, and we'll spend some time with them at Virtu. And I think he intentionally put Gallant first because it was presumably his first choice. Gerard came here. We sat in a conference room, and we started talking, and I just liked the guy, you know, immediately. I liked his demeanor. I liked his hockey knowledge. I liked his modesty. I liked his honesty. I liked his transparency. I had him draw up a couple power plays. I really didn't know what the hell he was talking about, but it sounded like he knew what he was talking about. And I said, all right, if I'm a 22-year-old kid and this guy's drawing up a bunch of X's and O's, you know, he makes sense to me. And I saw the fire in his eye. And obviously I knew him as a player. I mean, as a guy who scored 40 goals and had 200 penalty minutes, which shows a great deal of skill and grit, if you will. Vinny then spent a half hour with him, walked out, and said, this is the guy. He said, if you want me to see anybody else, that's okay, but this is the guy. We'd already set up another five interviews, so we went through them, and they were very talented, you know, top-notch people, but none of them had that initial draw that Gerard did. He was the right person for our franchise. We've got a young team, and we wanted someone that could relate to the young players. Obviously, he knows Huberto, or Huberto, as he always says it, from juniors. So equally could relate to the Willie Mitchells, but to the Barkoffs, the Bukesteds, the Gubransons, the Huberdos. He's a great teacher. He has zero ego about him. No ego about him at all. No pretense about him. So he's perfect for our franchise.
Joined by Doug Cifu in the Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Doug, who's more old school, Dale Tallon or Bill Torrey?
You know, it's like, they're like an old married couple. I love just, you know, like yesterday before the game, this is one of the benefits, I guess, of being an owner. I went up to Dale's office in the arena and literally we're just kind of, you know, BSing, if you will, with Dale and Mr. Torrey. It's like literally talking to two hockey oracles. You know, we're talking about, frankly, players I didn't even know from 40 years ago. And then we start talking about Bobby Orr, and Dale says, oh, yeah, Bobby's coming to the game tonight. Do you want to meet him? And I said to myself, do I want to meet Bobby Orr? I mean, you know, it's like, say, you know, asking me, do I want a cheeseburger? So, 20 minutes later, I'm there hanging out with Bobby Orr, which is just like a thrill of a lifetime for a kid who's, you know, grew up as a hockey fan. But Mr. Torrey is still the heart and soul of the organization. He's unbelievably vibrant. You know, he's, you know, built a number of organizations and obviously was the founder of the Panthers franchise. And so he is just a great resource to Dale. They watch every game together. They sit in the press box together. They're unbelievably telepathic. I don't think it needs to be spoken. And Dale bounces everything off them. So they're a terrific combination.
You know, Doug, there's been a big infusion of analytics into the game of hockey and in NHL and even on broadcast now. What's the Panthers' thoughts on that? And are you kind of on that curve?
Yeah, no, we're definitely on the bandwagon. And I know people like to write about it and talk about it. And Toronto's done some stuff very publicly, and everybody loves Moneyball, that kind of stuff. We make our money and our living based on technology and data. We run probably the largest electronic market making firm in the world, and it's connected to hundreds of markets, and we literally process, as you guys would say, millions and millions of orders and trades every day and literally just, you know, thousands and thousands of lines of code and trading data, and we harmonize all that, and from that we trade based on that information. Okay, so it's very, very important to what we do. And so we bought the franchise about a year ago. We ran into Vinny's a West Pointer, and so we got introduced to a math professor named Brian McDonald, who was a brilliant math professor at West Point, who happened to also be a bit of a hockey nut, big hockey fan, had done some work with the West Point hockey team. Eric Joyce, who's our new AHL general manager, was a West Point hockey player. He knew Professor McDonald, introduced us. We love Brian, and scroll forward a year later, he's our full-time analytics person, and he works with a couple other guys. And he provides great real-time information to both the coaching staff, but also to Dale and to myself and to Vinny.
Final question for you, Doug. I appreciate you giving your time today. The Panthers play up here in the middle of January, and then the Jets play down in Florida in March. What's more likely, you to come up here for a beautiful -40 day or a bunch of Jets fans to go down to Florida?
No, you're going to laugh because you think I'm saying this to be nice to you guys, but I have never been to that part of the world. I actually said to Vin it would be a great thing to go up to Winnipeg and to Edmonton and Calgary. I said to Dale, I said, you know, you can tell I've become a hockey lunatic because the other night I got home. I live up here in New York, and, you know, went home to see my wife and my two kids, and my son was watching some show. I said, give me the remote. I said, the Jets are playing the Islanders, and I got to root for the Jets because the Islanders are on this win streak in the Eastern Division. So I actually watched the Jets play the other night, and I think they won 4-3.
They did.
Yeah, and what's his name? Ladd had a great game, so I was screaming for young Mr. Ladd. So, you know, I know your team. I know your team. You're not as good as the Panthers, but I know your team.
Impressive. Doug Cifu, co-owner of the Florida Panthers, thanks very much for joining us on Saturday Spotlight on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime. Great to be with you guys.
We're into the final half an hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Online, tsn1290.ca. Got to give props to my buddy Richard Pollock here for that fantastic interview with Florida Panthers co-owner Doug Cifu. In case you missed any of it, and we do encourage you to get your hands on it, to listen to it, really give some great insight into owning an NHL franchise and owning an NHL franchise in a non-traditional hockey market. The interview will be available in its entirety on illegalcurve.com as well on tsn1290.ca. While you're at it, follow us on Twitter at illegalcurve, facebook.com/illegalcurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including the line pairings and the D pairings for tonight's Jets-Rangers game. It's all available on IllegalCurve.com. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL with NHL news and notes. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. For 30 years this month, coming up in 2 weeks' time, 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. The renovations are complete, and the comedy club has reopened. Tonight is the first night in the grand reopening. You can check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com. Two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m., and be sure to get your tickets for the Broken Lizard, guys. Friday and Saturday, November 7th and 8th, already sold out. Some tickets available for November 6th. And, of course, the concert series event, the 30th anniversary celebrations, November 14th and 15th. Get tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com.
NHL news and notes.
Whip around the NHL with some NHL news and notes for this Saturday afternoon at this point.
You better be careful how you say whip. Anyways, continue.
Quickly before it, I don't know what the heck. I mean, people really should have been in here for the airing of the interview because Ezzy's attention span.
I was
amazing.
I've never met Chris Walby before, so I introduced myself to Chris Walby. They're coming on at 1 to do the Bombers pregame show.
Drew and I thought it might be a good idea to now quiz you on the answers that Doug provided to the questions because you weren't able to listen for more than 5 seconds at a time.
I listened to the whole interview except for like maybe 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, that's really revisionist history right there, if I can say so.
I thought people would like to know, I'll let you off the hook here, Ezzy, that the Buffalo Sabres, I'm stuck on the Buffalo Sabres. They've played 11 games. They have 13 goals. Their hopeful next member of the team or next star member of the team, Connor McDavid, has 13 goals in 13 games in the OHL.
That's funny.
Yeah. They're desperately hoping. Yeah. Between them and Carolina. They're still better than Carolina. Carolina hasn't won.
It's crazy.
That's really amazing.
Make a strong argument that, you know, Carolina has the Staal brothers and Skinner and Lindholm. You can make an argument Buffalo needs McDavid more than Carolina needs McDavid, but both of those teams aren't doing too well.
Alex Semin for the Carolina Hurricanes, healthy scratch tonight, making $7 million a year.
He's been awful.
And you know, let's talk about that for a second, Drew, quickly. Before. I know that was not necessarily in the news and notes there, but when you watch him play, he's effortless in that you wonder where the effort is, and he's effortless in terms of the skill level, doesn't need him to be. You know, one thing Coach Peters says in Carolina is he's playing slow, and it's a pace thing. But you watch him play. I mean, he's got one of the best shots in the league, and he's actually pretty big. Doesn't care about engaging in contact, just doesn't seem to care in general. We talked about that contract when it was signed by Jim Rutherford last year. Why give you got the guy on a 1 year deal? That's exactly what you should be having the guy on. Then you sign him to a long term deal, a guy who has issues with motivation. just didn't seem like a good fit since day one. And that contract is absolutely is something that no one would take on.
Well, there's a lot of albatross contracts on that floor, on that Carolina Hurricanes roster right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, that Jordan Staal contract isn't looking any better by the day.
Yeah, but that's different, Drew. I mean, there's a use to him.
Yeah, yep. There's certainly a use. But, I mean, it is... You know, there's a lot of bad contracts on that.
I don't mind the Jordan Staal contract as much as the Semin contract, because if you look at Semin, I would say that his better days are behind him at this point in his career. As Richie mentioned, he's never really been a player that plays with a lot of intensity and passion. Mm-hmm. And all those years that he was racking up the points playing there with Backstrom and Ovechkin and all that. But, I mean, they need him to be a consistent. He hasn't scored a goal yet this year.
It's really remarkable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about two suspensions in the NHL. We spoke about one briefly earlier. John Moore of the New York Rangers, he's gone for 5 games for his hit on Eric Halla of the Minnesota Wild. Yeah. Alex Burrow's also gone. He's gone for 3 games for his hit on Alexei Emelin of the Montreal Canadiens.
The Moore one, I actually think, I know Burrow's got 3 games and Moore got 5. I actually think the Burrow's one was worse. Because Halla comes in the middle of the ice, and Halla's really fast. I was watching that game. Halla's really fast. Moore's actually a really good skater, too. And Moore comes, and Halla has his head down a bit, and he takes a shot, and Moore hits him. Now, Moore hits him in the head, and I have no issue with the 5-game suspension. Then you watch the Burrows play. Mm-hmm. And if you see the space between Burrows, and I mean, Emelin makes a terrible pass, actually, that Bonino picks off, but you see the space between Emelin and Burrows when the pass is made, it's like 3 steps. Mm-hmm. Takes 3 steps and jumps into his head. I actually thought it was worse because it wasn't as bang bang. It seemed like it was more, it was thought out. And I know Burrows plays on the edge and can be considered dirty, and Moore isn't exactly considered to be the cleanest player. But
a decade ago, the John Moore hit on Eric Halla is a clean hit.
If you watch the Stevens Lindros one again.
That's right. It's the same. Guy with puck, guy gets rid of it, bang, bang, he knocks him out.
Guy kind of head down in the middle of the ice. Yeah.
Burrows, it almost looks like he goes out of his way to hyperextend his arm and hyperextend his elbow to get a piece of Emelin.
It was the amount of space between the players as it happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought the space was far more significant in the Vancouver game against the Habs than it was in the Wild game against the Rangers.
That's right.
Yeah, I was expecting more and wanting more as far as games went. And I think you could make a strong argument that this hit, Richie, you give him 5 to 7 games. And if you really want to take it out. And they have to be consistent. And John Moore also has the suspension history. And that factored in, as you mentioned. But again, five games, is that enough to really fix what? And it's tough because you can't. It's all about precedent, as you know, Richie, right? And is
does
there
the NHL grounds? Even follow its own precedent?
No, the NHL doesn't. Well, there's no consistency.
I think setting the precedent with giving John Moore 7 to 10 games, and then all of a sudden, if you give 7 to 10 games, then it's like, okay, well, this is 7 to 10 games. Then you start getting into the bigger numbers here, and then you have to start suspending guys for more games because you've set that precedent. So, but these are both dirty hits, 3 games, 5 games. I would have given more, but how many, we've been on this radio station for 4 years now. How many times have we had the same conversation over and over again?
Absolutely. Sticking with the Department of Player Safety, according to Nick Kotsanika of Yahoo Sports, Scott Stevens, New Jersey Devils defenseman, has interviewed for a job with the NHL's Department of Player Safety. Yep.
I have no issue with that. I know people say Stevens wasn't as dirty as Chris Pronger. And Stevens played a real physical, mean game.
Let's be honest. He was the best hitter of all time.
Yeah, the best hitter of all time. I have no issue at all with Scott Stevens being... now, Scott Stevens isn't getting paid by the New Jersey Devils for the next 5 years.
Like Chris Pronger is with the Philadelphia.
I have no issue with the Stevens. I think that would be a good addition. Stevens was coaching with the Devils.
He was last year, yeah.
It appears...
Assistant coach, yeah.
I would guess, and I haven't read too much about Stevens' intentions. I don't know if he's even voiced them, because I know these are reports. But you'd assume it's probably in the New Jersey area, New York area. There's no travel here. His family and such. This would be less stress on the. I think it's less stress, frankly, and less travel. And that's. It seems like to keep a guy like that in the game. I have no issue with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I was a little bit surprised that Stevens decided to go another way, because he had just started to really establish himself as an assistant coach with the Devils, and then they brought in Tommy Albelin this year to be another assistant under Peter DeBoer, but. I think this is why, obviously, I'm a big Scotty Stevens fan, right? But I think why this is so good is because if you look at who is now in the NHL Department of Player Safety and who's left, like you had Rob Blake leave, you had Brendan Shanahan leave and all that, and Patrick Burke is there now, but you have Stefan Quintel who's leading it, and then he's brought in Chris Pronger, who, as we know, he's kind of a bit part-time now to begin with, and he can't deal with issues that involve the Philadelphia Flyers, but you bring in Scotty Stevens. They're surrounding themselves with all, like, well, you're talking about all Hall of Famers, by the way, when you're talking about Scotty Stevens and Chris Pronger. I think Chris Pronger's a Hall of Famer. So you're talking about two of the best defensemen of all time, really, mm-hmm. definitely of their era. So I think it's great. And I know that Chris Pronger, you know, he was given a little hard time because he's still, you know, getting paid by the Flyers and because he was a dirty player. But I think these types of guys that understand the physical aspect of the game are the perfect guys to be in these positions.
One last point, though. I mean, as we just said, Quintal's now in charge, Shanahan before. Is anything changing?
No.
Colin Campbell before that. Is anything really changing?
No.
3 to 5 game suspensions. I mean, I know there's less suspensions this year, and you could argue it's because there's been less infractions. You could argue because the leniency is the same as it's been in the past. Either way, I still don't see the hard line suspension, the hard suspensions that are going to inhibit these players from taking the liberties that they do.
Everybody knew John Muir was getting 5 games because yeah. 6 games would have triggered his ability to appeal it to an independent arbitrator. Yeah. And this way they go, he gets 5 and we're sending a message. But ultimately, we're not really getting into anything that could be a potentially risky area.
It's the same old game.
Absolutely. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll do one final segment and we'll finish it up with cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Reminder, right following us, Blue Bomber Game Day, bombing, Walby, Troy Westwood, take you through. They'll get you set for the Bombers and the Calgary Stampeders, followed by Hustler and Lawless, as they bring you coverage of the Jets and the Rangers from Madison Square Garden. A full day of sports coverage here on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Drew, I might be making an appearance on H&L later.
Well, I don't think you should spoil it for the audience. I think that should be, you know,
okay.
Wait, you know, they can just bated breath and anticipation for what could happen.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, might set radio precedent.
It has
radio
to do, history, I'll give a little...
Don't, just let it sit.
Let it sit.
Every NHL team goes through injuries in the course of a season. Obviously, the Jets lost Evander Kane. They just got him back. What's happening in Columbus with their injuries is actually bordering on remarkable. And every year, there's that one team that's, you know, completely snake bit when it comes to the guys that are out of their lineup. But if you go through the roster of injured Columbus Blue Jackets right now, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like it in, you know, in recent history in the NHL. You look at the guys that are currently scratches for them. Injured reserve, they have James Wisniewski, Mark Letestu, Sergei Bobrovsky, Matt Calvert, Brandon Dubitsky, Boone Jenner, and Nathan Horton. Also injured for them, Artem Anisimov. I mean,
their whole team's injured.
They have 9 regulars out of their lineup right now.
Yeah.
It's absolutely remarkable. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in my entire life.
No, and every team is going to face parts of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have major injuries, and the Jets have gone through periods, well, last year, especially with defensemen and Postman and Klitsam, and Jim Slater had a bad injury last year. So every team goes through this, but this is, no team can go through this type of injuries. Like you're talking about Nathan Horton obviously had the injury problems last year, and we're not sure if he's going to ever be able to play in the NHL again, but you're talking about, aside from Nathan Horton, you're talking about all guys that are on your top 2 scoring lines, and obviously the defense. But so you're talking about, you know, key players on your team, and I think Brandon Dubinsky's out for at least another 2 weeks. He hasn't played yet this year, and you know, he's a big part of this team. He was a big part of the run, and you know they almost upset the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, guys. And you know they're using some young guys, and they've had to call up guys from the AHL, but you know, he's been put in a tough situation there in Columbus.
I mean, what do you say, really, Drew? I mean, Todd Richards has a really tough task here, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he deals with it. And you have to deal with
strategies in terms of, you know, the complexion of your team has completely changed based on injuries, and also you have to deal with the attitude of the players when they grow tired and frustrated of, you know, losing, playing a lot, putting people in positions where they haven't played before, pressure on players earlier than you want to put pressure on players. I mean, you read some of the players on this roster, most fans wouldn't know who they are, and I wouldn't blame them. So it's going to be a tough task for him. Now, right now, you look at most of those injuries, Drew, are a couple weeks, but they're not, you know, the Nathan Horton injury as of indefinite. So you look at where they are right now in the standings, where they've 8 points in 10 games, but they're 4 points out of second. So you have to stay somewhere close to be able to make that run.
It's absolutely remarkable, and I mean, they're just sort of, you got to hope that they can tread water, because this was a team that most people had on an upward trajectory there in Columbus, and it's a matter of, can they handle these injuries? And once these guys are back, are they back, you know, for the rest of the year, are they back at playing at, you know, three quarters speed?
Only two teams in that division have a plus goal differential.
Well, that's the division that the Winnipeg Jets are going to be playing against tonight, so you might as well try and take advantage of that while you're at it.
Yeah, and, you know, the good news for Columbus Blue Jackets fans, they lost, of course, yesterday on Halloween to the Leafs 4-1. They play the Devils tonight. You've got the Hurricanes coming up on Tuesday and Friday, and, you know, so it's, you get a couple of easy games there, yeah. But there's too many key players missing for this team. Like, as Richie said, they just got to hope there's a tread water right now.
And Michael Ratchia, the Columbus Dispatch, who's been writing about the team for a long time, him, Aaron Portsline, a bunch of the Dispatch writers, said, you know, they have to get back to their identity of being that hardworking squad, because there's no talent there really right now in the squad. There's some talent, but not enough, and they have to get back to their identity.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Richard Pollock.
Well, how can we not cheer Gordie Howe today and hope that he gets well? You know, we've been kind of hearing updates about him and through his family, but he had suffered a stroke earlier in the week, so best wishes to him. And probably not many tougher guys than Gordie Howe to battle back from this, so our best wishes to him that he'll get my cheer, I think our cheer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'll never forget when I was 7 and I met Gordie Howe at Max Bell Arena, and I was like, I was shaking hands with a hockey god. So we hope that he's better. I'm just going to quickly, Drew, I'm going to cheer Marian Hossa. Picked up his 1,000th career mm-hmm. point. I've always been a huge Hossa fan. I think he plays the game the proper way. And I think, you know, there's a spot probably in the Hockey Hall of Fame waiting for Marian Hossa when he's done.
That's it for this Saturday afternoon in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Big thank you to Scott Powers from ESPN Chicago, Andrew Gross from the Bergen Record newspaper in New Jersey, and of course, Doug Sifu, co-owner of the Florida Panthers. In case you missed any of the show or Saturday Spotlight, they will be available on IllegalCurve.com, on TSN1290.ca, and of course, on iTunes, where you can subscribe to the show each and every week. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, and Bernstein's Deli. For producer Timmy, for my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Blue Bombers Game Day on TSN 1290.